This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com, No Borders, KF Malindi Jr. and Daryl Nyamtsamba every Friday 1 to 2 p.m.
What's good, my brother?
How are you going?
Nah, we good, bro. How you doing?
Not too bad, man. Those are the sounds of Veeam Karate. The album is called Nyamavuvu Night Sounds.
Oh, man. The music is amazing.
So I'm not going to say too much about it because we've got V later on in the show.
Yeah.
But that particular song is called Dublin. You can tell the quality of that music. You know what I mean? Like jazz. He's a jazz saxophonist. Composer, producer, likes to give themselves a lot of titles. You know, dudes with dreadlocks.
Yeah.
And they love singing this kind of music in Europe.
And you know, the white women love that.
Hey,
too.
The panties start flying.
Yeah.
Divorces and yada yada breakups. But yeah, I mean, we've got a very important topic of discussion today, and we've got Lawrence Dubé, who's a managing consultant at the World Wealth Consultancy, economic specialist. Welcome, Lawrence. You're not a stranger to the show, though.
Absolutely not. I'm not a stranger to the show. Great to be back again, and once again, congratulations to you guys. You're on the main stage. On the main stage, but I think,
yeah. Tell them.
CliffCentral.com is doing very well, and it's great to have you. And obviously, welcome to Daryl also, who's doing well on the show.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Yeah. So yes, point of contention. I mean, you know, yesterday. Patrick Chinamasa, our new, also former Minister of Finance, both titles in one, announced the 2018 budget.
All right.
First and foremost, was that announcement not premature?
When
do we usually announce the yearly budget?
Well, unfortunately, that's actually the timing was already there, and they can't necessarily move it away. So because the budget in the beginning of the year, Parliament will set out already the dates that will be available for when all the necessary budgets will be done and when their sessions are going to be held.
Okay.
So in a normal setting, I would have said to you that they should have moved it forward.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the budget cycle has implications if you don't.
Exactly.
Budget cycle has, if you don't. So it also made sense that Chinamasa returned. Because if someone else was new, and you can imagine, in almost like the South African situation where you get someone who's literally coming from health and suddenly moves to finance,
exactly.
And he's trying to get a grip to himself. So it's a baptism of fire if it was someone else, but because it was Chinamasa, then it probably was not.
Okay, so I mean, then definitely this is taking us just a step back, and then looking at the cabinet nominations.
Yep.
Because then a lot of people, you know, said, okay, well, you know, why do we have this old guy coming back? Why do we have that person coming back? These people have already been there. They already failed at one point in time. But now, clearly, it makes sense because Emmerson Mnangagwa only has a maximum of 6 to 7 months as president.
Yeah.
And for him to be able to implement policy change within that short period of time, he must obviously work with people who maybe are not seasoned but have been in those roles before.
Yes. Well, there's a couple of things that I play there. The first thing is that there's the legal issue. The legal issue is that he can only appoint people from parliamentarians.
Yes,
the current parliamentarians list. So he's got these options of 200 and something ZANU-PF parliamentarians. So even if he has got some fresh young guy out there, you know, people like throwing away all these things like, oh, bring back Mthuli Ncube.
Yes.
In practice, it's not that simple.
Yes, because constitutionally
it's not that simple. Then he's got the extra five guys. Mtanga was probably one of the key people who drove him to the presidency, but he couldn't be appointed also because of those restrictions. The second one is also a practical political issue. In a year's time, you've got an election.
Mm-hmm.
And within that 1 year, in September next year, you've got to try and impress.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's tried to put that into consideration. So that's why a number of people were not thrown under the bus completely.
Exactly.
But I would not be surprised after he wins the election, a number of people are probably going to be put on the side.
And he definitely, you know, you can tell that when he said that the voice of the people is literally the voice of God, Nokora was removed as Minister of Education. He listened to public appeal, and people said, "Well, you know, we're not going to have it," and he was definitely replaced. So we.
But I think I think that was more a legal issue.
Okay.
Look, credit to him; it's a good coincidence for him.
Yeah.
It works. I think Dokora was the weak spot. I've got a dilemma. I've made a mistake because practically speaking, the presidency made a mistake. They should have known that they can't appoint a certain number of people from the externally. So they made that fundamental mistake, and people make mistakes.
It was just a coincidence that it coincided.
No,
with.
It makes better an apology to go to a man and say, you know what, people are actually not happy with you.
Now
we need to make a plan. And I actually would have felt that the bigger issue was actually Mtsangwa. I thought. For what he did and being the main man behind the so-called, you know, pushing the Lacoste faction, I think he's the man who probably could have been given a blank page, literally say, Saga Uraji. So for me, him being advisor, he should have probably been the guy who feels like, guys, I should be the one who's offended. But look, the guy simply said, look, I've got to remove a number of people at Okoreya out, and even Mtsangwa himself who pushed me, I now have to make him a senior advisor. So I think it's a fair play to the president. Yeah, I mean, from the options that he had, I think he did well, and the people are happy, and that's what matters at the end of the day. Yeah.
So before we get into the nitty-gritties of the budget, of course we can't get into the nitty-gritties, but I mean the major facets of the budget.
Yeah.
There is the claim that we're looking at a 4.5% growth rate. Yeah. With any sort of policy that can be implemented, is it realistic to assume that we can reach a 4.5% growth rate?
Well,
especially considering we have elections in the same year.
In the same year. Well, I think that the exact figure, the GDP growth there that they're looking at for 2017 is, I think it's about 3.7%. 3.7%. And so in their thinking, they are hoping because we are starting at a low base that things will move very fast. But here's what I think. I think somewhere in the back pocket, they know that there are a couple of hanging fruits. Things that we know, I mean, like minerals, things that we know they're there.
Exactly.
They've always been there. They something that is happening in the market that has not managed to get them out there. Mm-hmm. And as a result, what all you need to do is really just get the market to start working. Agriculture.
Exactly.
I mean, agriculture is expecting a strong input. I think this year they are so optimistic that they're expecting an above 10% increase.
Would you credit that to Command Agriculture? Which was run by former Vice President and now President of Zimbabwe, Emmerson Mnangagwa.
And I was speaking to a friend of mine who's in the agricultural space. And it seemed like they're very happy with A. Marshall Perenchiri. And most of them seem to think he's a very pragmatic man. He's a farmer himself, so he kind of understands the escape. But more importantly, because it was a Mnangagwa project, Command Agriculture, it will work. It will get benefit. And I think I was also reading that from the budget that they're going to increase it and to include also the issues of livestock also as part of that Command Agriculture space. So I have a feeling that they know that there's hanging fruits there. Stop the madness. You know, there's already news. Right now I was reading an article on the Telegraph about how one white farmer was so, you know, ecstatic because they gave him back his farm. You know, and the president personally intervened and they said the land reform is over. This guy must go back to his farm. So there's good noises happening around.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the problem with the media, though, is that they then sensationalize things.
Yeah.
To say that land reform is going to be reversed, I think is wrong.
Yeah.
It is just going to be implemented in a more
structured manner. Yeah.
Which was what the idea was coming from 1980.
Yeah.
To say we're not just going to throw farms out and we're not just going to take farms.
Yeah.
It did lead to a situation where if you've got two, come on, surrender one.
One, yeah.
However, we did see a situation where all farms were taken. So when farms are returned, it's not a reversal of the policy.
Here's what I found shocking, though. I must confess, from a ZANU-PF perspective, you would realize that they during the budget they emphasized the fact that mining, specifically, mining is going to be. Still remain on the 51-49%.
But specific to two minerals.
So specific to two minerals.
Which is platinum and diamonds.
I actually thought agriculture will be a no-no for foreigners.
Why?
I thought so because I think it's the one thing that resembles their fight over the next 20 years. Their victory as ZANU-PF in terms of whether this thing has been worth it or not eventually will boil down to agriculture.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yes.
The rest were just after effects. You know, the rest of manufacturing.
Yes, everything else came
everything
after.
Else just come. The loss of sports and all that stuff. It was just an after. The real fight was an agricultural fight.
Yeah.
And the real win, they have to keep. Land has got to be the one thing that you deal with preciously.
Yeah.
And one hopes.
Yeah, but we find ourselves in a situation where we have a lot of farms just sitting idle, like no one's doing.
Dilapidated, not even idle. Dilapidated.
Yeah. Cell phone farming.
Cell phone farming. Armchair management. Okay, you mentioned farming, and then you know we were talking in vis-a-vis land and minerals.
Yeah.
where do you think the resurrection of our economy lies? Of course, it's multifaceted.
Yeah.
We cannot ignore. Everything is interconnected.
Yeah.
But where do you think that the strong point is? Where do you think the core of our economy is going to be based on going forward?
Here's the shocking thing about Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is a mini South Africa when it comes to economic fundamentals. So the first thing is resources.
Yeah.
Mining.
Minerals. Resources. Okay.
That's why they needed to relook that space.
And
there was a specific policy interventions around those things. So the first thing is resources. But you would know that the worst thing about resources right now is that prices are quite on the low.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But the good thing for us is that we can go into extraction stage. We've got so much of minerals that are still underneath the soil that we can still extract.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the hanging fruit. But you know, the one thing I think people are missing out, and no one is making noise about it, is Zim has a very good opportunity on tourism. The same way the shadow of it is also South Africa.
Exactly.
If we could realize that Zimbabwe has got so much potential tourism-wise, we've got some of the most hospitable people. We literally are the labor base of hospitality in South Africa. So that same skill can literally be taken back home.
Back home,
and,
exactly.
And suddenly you've got that hanging fruit. And for me, tourism is very easy. You just need to make sure that all those farms where the animals are, the Hwange National Parks, start protecting.
Exactly.
You know, stop allowing Americans to come and shoot elephants for no reason. And let people come take you. So mining for me is critical. But also, the biggest thing Zimbabwe has always had, we know, is intellectual capital.
Yes, our human resource is our biggest resource.
And the world is moving to a place where knowledge capital is becoming more and more important. I can tell you one thing. There are probably people who've done a lot of innovations, a lot of technology, and a lot of stuff like that are all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if Zimbabwe can just tap into that human capital, you'll be find that we've got some of the greatest ideas.
It's funny that you say that, Lawrence, because
we are Singapore in waiting, literally.
We had Annelien Ndlovu on the show, president of Zim SA Forum.
Yeah.
And he said that if ever we're going to have a Silicon Valley in Africa, it should be based in Zimbabwe.
Absolutely. You, and he's absolutely right. Because that's our greatest thing. Education remains, our biggest thing. I mean, even in the last current budget, I was seeing that we put in $905 million US dollars on education.
Do you think that's not a bit extreme? I mean, the disparity there, $905 million to education, but $408 million to health.
Yes.
The disparity there, I mean, where do you see that, Lawrence?
Well, the truth is that we are facing those, both education and health are dilapidated.
Mm-hmm.
But one must confess that education has always been our trophy.
Yes.
I had a debate on Facebook the other day on this issue around whether we're the most educated people in Africa.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, I went into it and I left it eventually because it becomes very emotional. But I think education is our trophy, whether we like it or not. That's why having Minister Dokora was a big issue.
Okay.
For us as Zimbabweans, it's a big issue. It's a trophy issue. It's also, but it's a base for us to do that knowledge, to just turn ourselves
because
into this thing.
Because education feeds into health.
Into health and all these other sectors. And health, honestly speaking, it's just about putting back some of the necessary infrastructure. We've got nurses all over the world. We've got nurses in South Africa who can't be employed because of an agreement also amongst the other countries that they can't, you know, exchange, employ nurses and some health professionals. So we've got the necessary fundamentals already in place to revive education.
It also runs into one of the president's biggest issues when he was inaugurated, where he said we need to remove the sloth within the civil service, the public service.
Yeah.
And the first lady actually made a visit to Parrenyatwa recently, and I think our public service has become very lazy and blames bureaucratic processes on then things moving slowly.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily about finances or capital. It's about just getting the people who are currently there to get off their butts and start doing their jobs.
Which is the one thing I actually been saying to myself when I looked at this budget. I hate to. I felt like after my disappointment with the cabinet, suddenly I was given this impressive document.
Yes.
And I was gobsmacked at how good a budget it was. In all honesty, my overview was that it made good noises.
Give us an analysis of what you think of the budget.
So the budget made good noises. I must confess, I was pleasantly surprised that it made the good noises. And secondly, I found it logical.
Yes.
And here's my picture of the Zim for a while now. I think Zim has been a young boy, a 21-year-old boy with a credit card. He's been swiping that thing and swiping that thing for all sorts of things and necessary things, I must add. And he's literally become a blesser. So what has happened now is suddenly he's told he's got to grow up. So the first thing for me about the Zim budget was not about what they're really going to do and put money into necessarily. Mm-hmm. I must confess, the first thing I was looking for was, young man, what are you going to stop spending on?
Okay.
That was the first thing.
Correcting policy.
Absolutely. The first thing, we needed to go backwards and say, guys, and then here comes Chinamasa, and he literally diagnoses our problems so well.
It was
all those indisciplines.
It's amazing, Lawrence,
spending
I think one of the biggest things that we need to take from this budget, that Zimbabweans, we've become very skeptical and very...
including myself.
Yes, and to, it's right that we be skeptical. We need to keep these guys on their toes.
On toes.
But I think one of the biggest things I drew from the announcement was... the fact that they finally admitted, after over 20 years, admitted where they failed.
Yeah, like, I mean, the policies like isolation from the international community, you absolutely will not survive. You will not survive alone.
There's no way.
More than, there's absolutely no way. Two, you can't even survive on the Chinese alone. Now we know. It doesn't matter if Big Brother is with you. You can't. If you look at one of my highlights also around that budget, is that there was suddenly this introduction of what, you know, Makaisa called soft indigenization. In other words, we want to keep indigenization, but what we're going to do is we're going to do a softer vision.
Okay.
So that way, it speaks to the three elements that I found that you know, the president, Mnangagwa, has already said. And I'm going to read you a statement of what he said the government's focus is going to be. He said the focus is going to be creating conditions for increased production-led economic recovery, number one, economic recovery.
Production-led.
Yes, production-led economic recovery, targeting foreign direct investment as a way to tackle prevailing high unemployment. So three focus areas from Mnangagwa. His focus areas are, number one, is production-led economic recovery.
Yes.
In other words, he knows that we need to recover. Number two, he's looking at foreign direct investments. Number three, he's looking at employment. That was the president himself. That statement was the president himself. Now, how does it come back, and how does the finance minister come in and fit into that? A high amount of that budget was literally dedicated to assuring international investors that, guys, it's safe. Land issues of land tenure to local people, that you'll get your title deeds. Issues of around engaging the local international community. Those things were, it was so heavy and it was so apparent.
The budget was less of a budget and actually more of a policy document to say, hey guys, we're about to change.
It was
an advert to the world to say, guys, hello.
I almost said it could have been written by an MDC person.
Well, I did hear, rumor has it, that a lot of the policy or the policy changes within that were mentioned during the policy the announcement were actually extracted from an MDC document.
It's called logic. The best thing about being in opposition is that you look at your look at the problems, you diagnose, and you can be able to simply point out simple logic.
Yes. Yeah.
And a lot of the things that could have taken Zimbabwe far from the troubles that it had was just logical stuff. I mean, simple things like understanding that no one will put money where they're not sure you'll wake up in the morning and just take it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, thankfully, these are the things that mattered. But the other part of the budget that was also a highlight for me, and I think we had a chitty chat around this, was the issue around defense.
Yeah.
And defense continuing to have a good, strong budget, almost above health. But I guess we must
admit, $12 million above health. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think let's just admit it, but we are a little bit sitting on what is probably a securocracy right now. A little bit of a securocracy, because we are seeing largely that we are using the military for example, helping out with the ports. We're using the military right now for policing. And I think maybe the provision of more funds for the military is probably in line with that. But perhaps to pay for the retirement of soldiers who are now becoming civilians.
But internationally, doesn't the military budget always supersede a lot of the budgets? I mean, the US, I know it supersedes.
It does.
In US, a lot of countries.
The US lives on fear.
Yeah.
If there's a country that is afraid every day, it's the US.
It's the US. So it only makes sense.
It only makes sense. We are not fighting anyone. In actual fact, our army is well reputed for good fighting, but we're always fighting someone else's. We are sorting something in Lesotho and whatnot. I don't think we are threatened by anyone. But look, at the same time, I would never underestimate the importance of a strong military.
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather have Zimbabwean army have that kind of reputation as a well-oiled machine, a well-resourced machine. But perhaps and under the circumstances, one must confess that one expected that there will be more done for health, because the number of people that have died in the past 20 years because bad health facilities is astonishing, to say the least.
We can't run away from the fact as well that, I mean, it's a 6-month period, very few resources available to the current president, and more so in terms of security services, he he doesn't have reliable security services to implement a lot of the policy changes that he wants to implement at this point. Corruption, for example.
Yeah.
The stem of corruption has been the police.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for him to just, okay, say, hey, military, Zokrekma barracks, and rely on the police is impossible.
Totally work, yeah.
Which is why they have reintroduced the police into the community, but under the guidance of the military.
Yeah.
And we can't, I mean, you and I had this argument over on Twitter,
yeah,
where I said that our military has been stagnant, idle, yeah, for the past 30 years. Mm.
They're finding use for them.
Exactly. So they're finding use, and they have educated them.
Yeah.
So many exchange programs have gone on amongst our military and foreign militaries. The current Minister of Foreign Affairs, who everyone was surprised, General Moyo, the famous General Moyo,
the famous,
I think the people's
the
champion,
man who made, yeah, it with one speech,
yeah, People's Bay. He actually has a PhD in international relations. I do think, you know, I mean, you know, I'm stand to be corrected. I do think the president is wise enough to know that where to place who.
I must say, there's also the other side of it is whether people like it or not is that Nagagwa has been put on center stage by the military.
Yes.
Yeah.
We can't run away from that.
We can't run away from that. Yeah. So he's going to invest back into them. I like what someone said. He said, you know,
it's politics at the end of the day.
It's politics at the end of the day. Yes, yeah, we can't. And I think I like what someone said, analyzed. He said, perhaps the moving of even people like SB Moyo to becoming civilians, because now he has to resign from the army.
Because they did say that
it's also
in the
to
budget.
Neutralize the strength of those that helped him come in. Lest the same thing happens to him also. So I have a feeling that a good number of military people are going to resign in the next few years. That's my honest truth.
Well, I mean,
Air Parents Shiri is already resigned. Perhaps if the general himself has ambitions in the December conference, you probably will have to resign. Then you also are going to pay off quite a lot of pensions. Probably change the dynamic a little bit around the army. So he's bound to give them a lot of budget.
That brings two things,
yeah,
to the center stage. One, where they're changing what they have said that they want everyone within the public service who's 65 and above to now retire.
Great move.
Very great move. We have an overpopulated public service.
Yeah.
What is the budget? What allocation was given to salaries?
I mean, the bonuses alone, my guy. Just bonuses. Listen to this. $176 million US dollars. Just for
to
bonuses.
But they did say they'll stagger them into 2018.
Into 2018. But that's already exorbitant, mm-hmm, under the circumstances of the budget that we want.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, like I said, there's an election in September.
Yeah.
Everything you must think about is an election
in
September.
Exactly. Yeah.
All this efficiency, all this noise, literally almost taking almost the MDC narrative off them,
mm-hmm,
is because there's an election. And if you follow the noises around social media, around people, you can see that people are giving the grace. And every little move that is being made, people are pleasantly surprised.
Do you think it was a political document, or do you think it's a genuine step forward in regards to changing and reviving the economy?
It's a good document. But I will hold on for a second until... Natural fact,
yeah,
I said I will hold on. I will start making a very strong judgment after that election.
Yeah.
If they win it, I will see the reality of this new Mnangagwa administration
2019.
In 2019.
Yeah.
The current play is very political play. I mean, if I were him, I would also be playing political play at this moment.
Of course,
I will be trying to play the right noises, the right space,
mm-hmm,
so that even the neutrals, because Zimbabwe has got too many political neutrals.
Mm-hmm.
ZANU-PF supporters are ZANU-PF supporters. And in the past few years, a lot of them have been disillusioned. But usually, they are ZANU-PF supporters.
Mm-hmm.
MDC supporters are alternative supporters, a good number of them.
Mm-hmm.
While the number of people who are strong MDC supporters, they're there. But when you look at it, they could float to someone who's a good candidate.
Yeah.
That's why a guy like Nkosana comes and you find some people suddenly moving off.
Yes.
Maimjuru came, some people started moving off. Dr. Makoni came, some people started moving off. And I think all he needs to do is the next year, if he can put the right noises, make the right moves, he's bound to find himself moving to a place where all the neutrals start moving and slowly you get that right, you know, the right election and get the right mandate.
Considering the environment, the prevailing political environment, and that we have decided to go for elections in 2018, I think it was 143 or is it 183 million that's been allocated to elections?
To elections, yes. Yes, I think it's 104 million US dollars that's been elected to elections, yeah.
Considering the environment
and the head
that's
is,
there.
And the head resigned today, by the way.
Justice Rita Makarao.
Yes.
Do you think we are ready? That's a very meager budget.
Yeah.
For going to elections?
Well, the norm with elections in Africa is that eventually we beg a US, US aid. Someone is going to say, you know what, we want your democracy so much, so we're going to give you money to hold a decent election. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the re-engagement international community becomes critical. So the 104 million is probably what we can afford.
Yeah.
And after that, we'll be able to say, guys, as you can see, there's peace. There's a good conditions that we can deliver a free and fair election. The most natural thing is that even the opposition will go out there and say, hey guys, please support this, and then you will find that there's more resources going towards that election. Election,
yeah. Lawrence, final word on just a general statement regarding this budget. Your thoughts, your views going forward, Zimbabwean economic revival.
Well, first and foremost, the cost-cutting measures were brilliant. I must be honest. Abolishing the youth posts, we all know that they're just a big, large ZANU-PF, feeding system. Yeah. But retiring civil servants above 65, mm-hmm. That is very important, because, and then we also need to find that we do an audit of those ghost employees. The next question is, once we find that they were ghost employees, they were probably being paid by someone. The question is, what will happen to them? And that's important for me. The knowledge base must also be preserved. Remember, all these guys like Tobayo Mtete, we want to be fired, but the truth is, he is the passport and all the...
He has
the knowledge. Yeah, yeah. He holds a certain level of knowledge.
General,
He is the Registrar General. And what are we going to do with that intellectual capital? Perhaps those guys could be retained in one way or another, consulting in one space or another. I mean, the issues around travel, let's be honest, Mugabe's travel was a big issue.
Yes. Yes.
That had to be put in there.
The fifth AU-EU summit is currently going on.
Yes.
And they cut down delegation from 30
from
to 30 four.
To four.
Yeah.
Just four.
I mean,
brilliant.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Four people. So that worked very hard. But biggest thing for me, which I saw that a lot of people missed, was the finance minister said there's no money for devolution. And devolution is a very critical issue for the opposition, and more importantly, Midlands and Matabeleland. So basically, they're saying they want to abolish the structures, the provincial structures. But that, remember, feeds into what they agreed to in a constitution around devolution.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Saying you're going to abolish it and not putting any funds to devolution, that creates grounds for the opposition to continue to ponder on that. And also for organizations like Mtwakazi, who continue to say, cut the country into half. Look, it's an illogical argument, but they will then find ground on that basis to say, you guys are back again, you're controlling plants from the central place, you're still running things for Marare, and that will give the opposition a good ground. That issue around devolution definitely is a missed point. I think they should have just dealt with it, because it's a sore point for quite a number of things. Great on foreign direct investment. I think they're doing very well to make sure that there's policy certainty. They're working towards the amendment of the indigenization policy, re-engaging the international community, but also the issue of tapping into diaspora. So my only problem with the diaspora issue was that all that was there was the words tapping into the diaspora.
Yeah, they wasn't.
So they need to speak to us and come back to us and say, how exactly do you want to tap into us? Because I'm sure we will be wanting to find out how they're exactly doing that. Rebate and tax concessions for manufacturing, modernization of port of entry. I think those are great initiatives. Ultimately, this is a great, good budget under the circumstances. But I must say, will old habits die hard? That is the question.
Yes, Lawrence Dube, World Wealth Consultants. Thank you very much. Daryl, out?
Yeah. I'm going to have to dash love and leave you.
I know. You got some business. You're making some money. We can leave
to make
together.
Some money.
We can leave Polis on the show. Okay, stay tuned in. Cliff Central, No Borders. Your boy KF, Daryl Nyansamba. Thank you very much, Lawrence Dube. We've got Veeam Karate after this. And let's leave you for a couple of minutes with some more Veeam Karate. Nyamavuvu Night Sounds. No Borders, cliffcentral.com. We're back. Got my boy V in the building. You already know V Mukarati. It's been a while, bruv. Like, I've been trying to get you on this show, and you're always busy, man. Like, what's going on? V, welcome.
Thanks, bro. Thanks. I'm glad to finally be here, actually, because we have been talking about this.
Yeah, we have, even though you didn't really come for me. It's just a coincidence. I'll take what I get.
No. I came partly for this as well. Yeah,
promise. But okay, so before you got here, we started the show off with Dublin, off of the new album, Nyamavuvu Night Sounds.
Yeah.
That's the 2017 album.
Yes.
Just before the break, just at the break, we played Soul Love. Dublin Soul Love. Tell us a bit about those songs.
Okay, well, Dublin is like the opening track to the album, and it's basically, you know, the album is a concept album, so essentially it's sort of like all the music is attached, you know, every song is telling a part of a story until you get to the end of it, and like Dublin is sort of establishing the relationship. It's a love album.
Okay,
and it's basically about two people meeting in this place. So they meet up in Dublin, and
was
that's
this
where.
Was this album written for someone specific?
No.
Okay.
Oh, now it's Chandu.
Shout out to you know who.
Yeah,
I hope you're listening.
Yeah, shout out to you. No, it's been something that I kind of worked on over a long period, you know, and it's sort of as time went by, eventually just came together. It was like and if you listen to the album as well, you know, you can't really pin it down in terms of genre or whatever.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because Veeam Karati is a jazz musician.
Essentially.
Saxophonist, composer, producer, the whole enchilada.
Yeah.
But okay, you were saying that you can't pin this album down to a specific genre. Can you further?
Yeah, because like each song is sort of has its own identity. And I think that was part of what I was trying to do with the record in that it's a story and the changes, that come in the music are sort of, a metaphor for the changes that happen in relationships, okay. For the changes that happen in the seasons, which is why
called. It was organic.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't like, okay, I gotta sing like this.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was just like, and also the name Nyamavuvu Night Sounds, like Nyamavuvu is August in Shona, obviously. Okay, maybe not so obvious.
But yeah, okay, for those people who don't know, so Nyamavuvu is August, which is very windy.
Yeah.
Month, yeah.
It's a time of change. It's when, like, the winter and the sort of the break between winter and summer. Mm. So it's a very kind of like, there's a lot of movement and a lot of change. Like, the flowers are coming back.
It's
onto
like a spring
the,
for people in the West.
Yeah, exactly. It's
although
like
we don't really have
a very
spring,
quick
really.
Spring.
Yeah, yeah.
A 30-day spring. So that's, there's a lot of like metaphor in the way that the album is written, the way that it's structured, the way that it was recorded as well. I recorded it at home. I set up a studio at my place, and we did everything in a way that was super sort of liberating artistically, you know. And one of the reasons I did it like that as well was because it's really difficult to record music in Zimbabwe. Sometimes it can,
And especially a genre like yours, jazz. It's a very niche genre.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a specific market. Do you think that jazz crosses over, like, to the youth? And when I say youth, I'm not talking about 14, 15-year-olds who are dabbing. But I mean, like, you know, generally, like, 18 to 35. Do you think jazz is popular amongst the youth of Zimbabwe?
Because
when we think jazz,
yeah,
unless someone is really particular and really loves music, because I follow your music,
yeah,
but people who are not particular, the only jazz musician they'll think of is probably Tuku.
Yeah. And that, I'm not sure whether that also qualifies
as jazz. As well. I mean, we'll probably call it Tuku music.
Tuku music. Exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, you get my point, right? Like, we don't even for us to define what jazz music is.
Well, the thing is, you know, there's a lot of difficulties that come with this genre, I suppose, specifically in Zimbabwe. With regard to accessibility, like, there's not a lot of, you know, we don't have a lot of access to, like, the radio, for instance. Like, okay. I mean, you know, you'll hand in your music, et cetera, and they'll play it, like, you'll have a few interviews, or whatever, as the album is released and stuff like that. But generally, it's not pop, you know.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So there's a tendency for the DJs and stuff to not, like, essentially end up playing the stuff.
So, I mean, which is a problem that I've always had.
Yeah.
You know, with gatekeepers, yeah. I mean, it's not up to the radio DJ to pick out what's hot or what's not.
Yeah.
It's up to them to introduce people to the music and for the people to decide what they want to listen to.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, you know, I've been, you know, flicking through Nyamavuvu Night Sounds, and in my own regards, definitely, I mean, it's an amazing album, and it could definitely classify as, it's something I'll play in the car.
Cool.
On my way to the club.
Yeah,
you know
dope,
what I mean?
Dope.
If I'm going to meet up with my girl, or if I'm going to meet up, you know, like, hoping I meet up with a girl.
Thanks.
And I think it's international. It's a very international sound as well. So I mean, it definitely qualifies as music that should be played on our local radio station.
Yeah, which is an interesting thing that you know, it hasn't happened in that way. But you know, that my thing isn't really about, you know, getting airplay or like getting famous or things like that. I just want.
Okay, that's what famous people say.
No,
famous
no.
Famous people say it's not about me being famous.
No, I mean it.
Because with or without radio, you are a famous individual. I mean, everyone knows Vim Karate. I don't know about, you know, younger generations, but I mean, amongst my peers, definitely everyone knows Vim Karate. You are sort of an enigma.
How well, so?
I mean, like, if I told people, right, yo, I'm chilling with Vim, I'm like, where'd you meet that dude? That nigga actually walks the streets? Like, really? And first time we met at a party.
Yeah, know, it was right? at a barbecue.
Like, oh, wait, hey. Oh, yeah, that's V. The dreadlocks are unmistakable.
So the thing is, like, something my dad said to me a very long time ago. I quit law school to study music. And he had things to say about that.
Definitely.
He was totally supportive. My parents, I will not like lie, have been super supportive since I was a child. You know, they paid for all of our education and stuff like that. And they've got us instruments, da da da, and exposed us to all of the people and the music that inspires me. But he said something when I decided to sort of go professional, and he was like, okay, just when you do this, sort of stick to your principles, remember who you are, and make music that, you know, when your grandkids listen to, can be proud of.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So
it's legacy.
Yeah. So for me, it's not really about now. It's more for posterity that, like, you know, I want my grandkids to listen to music and go like, oh, granddad was cool. You know, that's going down, you know.
And, you know, we call the show No Borders, and we call it No Borders for a reason, because, you know, we're trying to connect Africa. And I think the biggest way, I always say this, like, the biggest way our generation has been able to connect Africa, you know, we always talk about Pan-Africanism. Pan-Africanism has not worked from a state level, not from a social level either. I mean, we have xenophobia all over Africa.
Yeah.
Look at what's going on in Libya currently. You know, we've had these things in South Africa.
It's horrible.
We still have tribalism. I was in a Twitter debate. I don't know what you want to call it.
A Twibate.
Last night over Gukra Hundi.
Oh, my gosh.
And people are still very defensive, reasonably so. However, I was just coming out and saying, okay, guys, well, we don't know exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Is there any, and then I asked the question, I posed questions, two questions. Mm-hmm. Is there any actual, are there any factual, is there factual history that has been written about Gukra Hundi for us to then find out what exactly happened?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least something a bit more factual than the folk tales that we hear. You know, it's just, I've only heard from a couple of people, you know?
Yeah.
And then,
I think there is a document that was put out.
So that's what I was, that's basically what I was asking. You know, I acknowledge that I didn't know. So, I mean, instead of getting into a debate of whether it happened or not, or whether who was the victim or not, why don't we educate ourselves first?
Yeah.
And one thing, going back to the point in hand, is the best way that we've been able to do this on the African continent, share our stories, has been music.
Absolutely.
Pan-Africanism has really started off musically. I mean, Davido, Wizkid, Sarkodie, Oliver Mtukudzi, Vim Karate, Yuma Sekela, a.k.a. Casper Nyovest has just made history. Music has been that thing that has united Africans foremost before anything else.
Absolutely.
And it is us as the youth, you know, which is why but in terms of No Borders, and in terms of what you're speaking about in regards to legacy, and you said, do what you love, right? But I mean, maintain your roots. Believe in it. Your genre is definitely one where we have to say that the content of your music has remained original. And it's a problem that we have in Zim, where people are always saying that our music is not original.
Yeah.
Where do you see that? Why is it so that Zim has no... We don't have an identity. I think that's what I'm trying to say. We don't have an identity music-wise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose, you know, our history was taken from us in a lot of ways, and but then I tried to shy away from playing the blame game and going like, oh no, because
we were colonized for 100 years,
and a lot of our culture and our sounds were paganized, really. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I think, you know, in the end, sometimes you don't necessarily have to have that identity from like 100 years ago, from 200 years ago, or anything, because at some point we're going to be 200 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it's like right now in the past weeks, like Zimbabwe has gone through like a historic moment and we've seen history being written. Mm-hmm. So why can't we write our own history and create our own culture and music and stuff like that? If we don't have anything.
Our own sound.
Yeah, our own sound. Like if we don't have anything to hold on to. And of course, like there's a traditional sound of like mbira and, you know, marimba and the choral work.
Yeah.
The vocals like in Zimbabwean traditional music are absolutely insane. The harmony and stuff like that is all hectic, and sometimes it is not as well represented internationally in the music. But also I think one thing that is kind of not really acknowledged is that our post-independence, all the bands that kind of came out, you know, post 1980, and there were some amazing bands like the Pundu Boys and like, you know, things like that. A lot of them came out into this world and were thrown into this situation where they went from being second-class citizens to being like rock stars.
Yeah.
And then they weren't like, they weren't really like financially, what you call it, literate in a lot of situations and in other ways, like sexually literate and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you see that if you ask about all of those bands, a lot of them died, you know, of HIV and AIDS, because that was the same time that AIDS was coming and becoming a scourge in the continent.
People were ignorant towards
it. Exactly. Yeah. Like people were ignorant towards it. People were like, you know, there was the stigma. There was the there was no treatments as well. There was just like a lot of ignorance. It's the same thing even like in literature and stuff like that. Nambuzo Marichela, etc.
Yes, exactly.
You know, people, they passed away because a lot of the celebrities at the time, the people that were actually holding on to and creating that Zimbabwean sound, their lives were taken away from them.
Very,
you know,
early,
so now it left a void where there wasn't anyone filling it, because all of a sudden when you were a kid and you said I want to be a musician, your parents would be like, ah, Udagufa.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, like
Jema Gitari,
do you want to get AIDS and die? You know, because that's the legacy that had been left behind. But now I think we've moved on from that. And now, like, you can see there's a lot of amazing young, talented musicians that are coming out of the country. And just watch the space, I think. I think it's this, at this moment, Zimbabwe is going through something like politically, artistically, like culturally. There's something moving.
What particularly makes your music so socially conscious? Because your music is definitely it tackles issues, day to day issues.
Mm.
I mean, you're not one to shy away from what's going on, to speak about things that actually matter, whether it be political, love, you know, just plain social matters that people, you know, listen to and think, okay, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
What keeps you on the ground? Like, what makes your, why is it you don't, you know, try and assimilate to, you know, like trends like dabbing? Can't really dab.
First of all, I can't dance. Let's just get that out of the way. No, but I think, you know, that's the source material, isn't it? You know, just living and experiencing life and going through pain and suffering, and sometimes also just like being able to appreciate the joys of life, you know. And one of the reasons why I think this album, like if you listen to it, you know, it starts off very, very positive and like, oh, ow, yeah, this is great. But then it's sort of like
that Zimbabwe in 1980.
Yeah, exactly. And then it crash lands like close to the end. But then it also leaves you, you know, dare I say it, on a cliffhanger at the end. So it's something that, you know, it's just life, bro. It's just life. Like life doesn't really. It doesn't hold on to things. It's very volatile.
Mm-hmm.
So I just look at the volatility of all of it. And is that a word? Can you say that? Volatility?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Plus, people make up words these days.
Yeah.
Irregardless
of what anyone says.
Yeah.
So that's basically it for me. And a lot of it also comes from not just having the source material as like Zimbabwe or like my house or whatever, but I try and travel as much as I can. I try and see, I try to talk to as many people as I can. I try and read as many like books and listen to podcasts and get like, you know, just get the feel for what's happening in the world in other places, because there's so much. I mean, there's just so much history and so much like data, you know, it's like it's insane. And my brain is like a sponge.
It goes back. I'm always promoting my show. Sorry.
Yeah,
it goes back to No Borders.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, of course, you are singing for your direct environment.
Mm-hmm.
But even your direct environment is affected by environments around it.
Absolutely.
So if your music sticks to Mbare.
Yeah.
But Mpano Kumbare is trying to get to Borodale.
Yeah.
But you're not giving them a sense of what Borodale is like.
Exactly.
Then I think you're failing your listeners, and you want to spread a message. You want to talk about your people and,
yeah.
you know, and what your people are and who they are and their traditions and their cultures.
Mm.
But at the same time, you also want to talk about how you have experienced, you know, your culture vis-a-vis other people's cultures.
Yeah.
What do you think about, you know, considering all the events that have been going on in Zimbabwe right now,
yeah.
we can't run away from the political changes. Media called it chaos. We called it a rebirth, the most amazing thing.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, what do you think the role of music is, of musicians, in regards to politics and spreading awareness and so forth and so on?
Well, I think we have an important role in regard to every facet of life, you know, not just politics or anything. And I guess, you know, Zimbabwe is most famous for its political sphere in the international eyes anyway. But I think it goes beyond that. Our responsibility is to be commentators, you know, on whatever's happening socially. If there's injustices, then we need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. If there's, like, you know, beautiful things that are happening, we need
talk
to
about them as
talk
well.
About them as well. You know, if there's and if there's things that are happening in our own personal lives that we feel that other people can empathize with, then yeah, mm-hmm. we need to talk about that. So that's really what it is. For me, I feel that musicians and visual artists and you know, screenwriters, etc. Our responsibility is basically just to be real, man. Be honest. Yeah, just go in there.
And write the history of the nation. Because this is exactly what you guys are doing. I mean, like, if I pick up a Thomas Mapuma album, he's literally taking me through the Chimurenga.
Absolutely.
You know, to the extent where we call his music Chimurenga.
Chimurenga music, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's very important for artists to... And we're not saying there doesn't need to be turn-up.
Of course.
I mean, let there be turn up, but let there be content to the music. I mean, I have this issue with millennials. I know millennials are. I only found out recently that I'm a millennial too. Actually, not recently. I just say it all the time because I'm always trying to deny I'm a millennial. But I found out quite a while ago that I'm a millennial.
Mm.
But I think millennial isn't, you know, you can't put it at an age.
No.
Because they said 1984 to people who were born in 84 to 99 or something like that.
Yeah.
Or now. I don't know. Something like that.
I don't know.
But I think being a millennial is a state of mind.
Yes.
To say, do you want everything handed to you on a silver platter?
Yeah.
How do you view the world? Do you? I mean, competition. Competition is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to tell my kid you did well when they came last.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm like,
for sure.
Did you try your best?
Yeah.
Okay. If you tried your best, that's good.
Yeah.
But you should try better.
Yeah, yeah.
Because coming last is not a good thing.
Exactly.
Competition is healthy. And
it is healthy.
That's how we were raised.
And I think that, you know, a lot of that is misconstrued. In that sometimes. You know
how you give medals these days?
Yeah.
To kids who came last? Like, I mean, why are you giving a medal to someone who came last?
No, okay.
With, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you, but I think there's issues with things like that, but in a lot of ways, I think with raising your kids, like, the responsibility is on the parents, you know, and sometimes, you know, if you do give the kid a medal who came last, you know, maybe he's going to come first in another thing, or the circumstances are always so different, to the point that we can't really generalize about some of the stuff, you know, because there's, you know, kids always need encouragement and they always need you know,
support
and love. And for me, whether they came first or last, I never came first when I was running, bro. Mm-hmm. I never, like,
I
just,
I,
like,
I didn't
in athletics and stuff like that.
I didn't even run at all. I was like, yo, guys, why don't y'all leave me out? Like,
I never, I
no
mean,
point.
I've never been on a sports team, you know, I've never been picked for a sports team because I've never really been good at it, but I was good at something else. And, I don't know. I think, it's complicated, but at the end of the day, if it's something that's coming from a place of love, if it's something that's coming from a place of encouragement and a place of, like, of building a young mind so that they don't, like...
Do you think we're building young minds in Zimbabwe, especially in regards to the arts?
I think we could be doing more.
Like you said, first of all, one, parents, we're a very academic nation as Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
I think Africa is also generally a very academic. I mean, because of the poverty that we came out of,
mm-hmm.
and our assumption because of colonization,
yeah.
is that the only way out of poverty is
academia.
Do you think the arts are getting their place? And more so, Zimbabwe's 2018 budget was announced yesterday by new minister of finance Patrick Chinamasa, and I didn't, you know, there's no, the arts doesn't hold its own actual place within our budget. It falls under the Ministry of what? Education, Sports, Art and Culture.
I'm not sure, I was traveling.
But it's somewhere there.
I haven't seen it. But I hear you, yeah.
Yeah, it's somewhere there. And it didn't have a proper place. What do you think you guys as artists can do to sort of, first and foremost, influence parents to understand that, yo, kids can be good at something else and they can make a living from this?
Yeah.
And for government to support arts and culture?
I think one really important thing that we can't shy away from is that for the longest time, freedom of expression hasn't really been a thing in Zimbabwe.
True.
It's been thwarted in so many ways and in a very organized and systematic way. So it makes it really, really difficult to communicate these things. But hopefully, like, from this point going forward, we'll have a chance to have more freedom of expression and have more opportunities to be seen. Because I think that's part of the problem. There's a lot of amazing artists that are creating amazing stuff, but it's like, where do you see them?
Mm.
You know, like in Harare, there isn't really a dedicated music venue in the city.
Yeah.
And it's obscene.
And we closed down Book Cafe. Well, it had to be closed down.
Yeah, it had the Book Cafe, which was like this place where we all started our careers. Yeah. We all played there and we all kind of like, it was like a breeding ground for people.
It should actually be a museum.
Exactly. And it should be getting funding from the government if they can't handle, like, you know, the pressures of running
it's
the business.
It's monumental in regards to music and the arts in Zimbabwe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And closing down places like that, you know, it just creates this void and it makes it very, very, very difficult for culture to become noticed, you know.
And you're just coming off of, you know, you just travel from Australia.
Yeah.
And you travel a lot in terms of, you know, your tours music-wise. How is our music being received across our border?
Wow. it's actually really surprising how people, sort of the dialogue changes after the show. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people kind of go in and they don't know who you are. They've Googled you or something. They've listened to one thing on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you do the show and then you come out and the conversation is different. So it's wonderful actually that we get a chance to change the perception of what Zimbabweans are, of what Zimbabwe is, and what it has been painted as in the sort of in the media, in the mainstream media anyway. So I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing. And to be fair, I think also next to maybe India and Ireland, we've got some of the largest diaspora, numbers. So it's a lot of people that miss home as well that want to get an attachment, and they know they can't go back.
That's definitely something that you guys do for people. Like, I mean, just to be in Dublin.
Yeah, yeah.
And be able to watch Veeam Karate live.
Yeah,
Exactly. Like,
yeah. It's really appealing and it's a wonderful gift that, you know, we've been an opportunity we've been given to do those things and to play that role in people's lives. So I'd say, like, to answer your question, yeah, you know, it's being received really well, and we just have to keep upping our game, because the other thing is that you if you don't really take the time to listen to other people and pursue, like, other forms of inspiration, you get stagnated.
True.
You know, and that's one thing. I went to a concert in Melbourne, a performer, a female vocalist, her name is Napalm. Man, y'all need to check this chick out, man.
Okay.
Oh my God. Like, I was in awe. Like, the whole time, it was an hour and a half set, and she was just standing there with, you know, with the guitar and three backing vocalists. Crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
So it's things like that where I've been thinking about a new album and, like, how it's going to sound and stuff like that. But I know definitely I'm going to throw a load of backing vocals into that now, mm-hmm. you know, after hearing that and seeing what it did for me and what the human voice is capable of.
Exactly.
And it's something that we kind of ran into by accident. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't meant to go to that show. It wasn't on my schedule. It wasn't anything. But it's the sort of thing that, you know, I walked away from going like, wow, I've got work to do.
Exactly.
You know, I need to go and write this. I need to, like, change my arrangements in a certain way and stuff like that. And it's that sort of that desire for knowledge, I think, that mm-hmm. that we should really be striving for all the time.
Film Karate, man, thank you so much. Finally got you in the building. So, man, hey, 25, 30 minutes goes by so fast.
It goes by really fast.
You coming back next week?
I wish. I'm going home on Sunday. Yeah.
But I'm going to meet up with you tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
You
absolutely.
Know, Saturday.
Yeah.
You got to do something.
Yeah.
Nyama Fufu Night Sounds. How do people get the album? How do people get in touch online, access to VM Karate?
Well, the album is on all the sort of digital music platforms like Deezer. It's on Spotify. It's on. It's everywhere. But VEEMUKARATI, Vima Karate on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. And you can just like hit me up if you want to get in touch, or Vima Karate Music as well on Facebook. But all of it, it's all online. And it's all there, you know.
It's all there.
It's on iTunes. Buy the album,
please.
Let me plug this thing.
Yeah.
Buy the album! Buy the album! It's on iTunes, so please. Help me pay my bills.
You already know, man. The musicians got bills too. They got bills too. Need to buy that Gucci too.
Buy that.
Hey, I gotta say, V's looking really slick right now. You need to leave.
I'm going to a wedding.
Messing up with my swag. All right, we're gonna end the show with "There Were Times" from VM Karate off of the album Nyama Vuvu Night Sounds. Nyama Vuvu Night Sounds. Go cop it. No Borders. CliffCentral.com. KF Malindi Jr. Next week, same time, same station.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.